The following program is paid for by the Veterans Transition Resource Center.
Welcome to Veterans Talk, The Forgotten Promise. I'm R.J. Doe, along with Jim Littner, Chef J.B.
Good afternoon, R.J.
We have two guests with us today. One of them is local to Las Vegas. His name is Jim Slater. And the other, let me just say this. He's an American veteran, and his name is Doug. I'll get a more formal introduction a little bit later on. I want to start off by talking about Vets Talk Freedom, but before that, we always have to recognize our sponsors, and right now there's a shortage of homes in Las Vegas, and if you're looking, now's the time to do it, because we know the interest rates, like everything else, gasoline, groceries, etc., have gone up, and they recommend you get pre-qualified first. You can do that through Benchmark Mortgage and talk to Michael Shialaba. His number is 702-592-0722, and then you need a good realtor to back up that prequal, and that would be Marianne Olson with Century 21 Gavish. Her number is 702-375-6840, and both are veteran friendlies. Give them a call if you're looking for a house, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Jim, to start the segment.
Well, thank you, RJ, and welcome to the show, Jim. Again, this is our second show doing the Vets Talk Freedom. A lot happening this week, Jim. Any comments?
You know, first of all, just let me wish everybody faith, courage, and enthusiasm. What happens this week, America has a strong backbone. And our backbone is always there. It's stiff. It's strong. And I don't see a whole lot of problems with what's going on, other than we need to get to the election, probably.
Well, Jim, I agree. I really start to wonder sometimes, though, with, and as we've said when we started this segment 2 weeks ago, we aren't going to be talking one party or the other. We're talking right and wrong. And I'm starting to wonder just how many patriots we have left in this country with some of the things I'm hearing from this radical left. It seems like everything that spews out of their mouth, they hate America for this reason. They don't like it for that reason. That bothers me a lot, and I think we better start paying attention, wake up, and take this country back. And when you vote, again, I'm not saying which party to vote for, but you better educate yourself on who you are voting for and what they stand for, and then hold them accountable if they don't do it.
Always have to remember that the greasy wheel gets the grease, right? The people that make the most noise, there are not that many of them. They're just making the most noise. If we talked about the silent majority that's sitting out there, I think most people are just so busy living their lives. They've got kids in school. They've got work. They've got all this going on. They don't have time to sit and fret about every little thing that the crazies are talking about. I think a lot of people will wake up, will do what they need to do when the time is right.
You know, I would hate to think that this generation, that someday down the road, that they'll be sitting there talking to their children and perhaps their grandchildren, instead of saying how great this country is, they're talking to their kids and grandkids and saying, I can remember when.
Back in the day.
That's right.
Yep.
And that bothers me. We're not educating our children. We're not teaching them history. It seems like, again, the far radical left, they want to destroy all of that, right down to now attacking parents at school board meetings. I mean, decades ago, they started buying our higher education, the Middle East, the China, and now it's getting down to high school, grade school, kindergarten. The parents have every right to step up and say the way their children should be taught instead of this critical race theory stuff and all that. What about reading, writing, and arithmetic? What happened to the basics, RJ?
As Jim pointed out, everybody is living their lives, and that makes you want to question whether or not patriotism is alive or not. And that's one of the things when Vets Talk Freedom, that's one of the things we need to know, but we need to know what patriotism is first. And basically, that is the love of your country and the people that make it up. You also agree to the basic makeup of our Constitution and the will to serve your country to make it better. Now, we have Doug on the phone with us, too. And I said he's an American and a patriot and a veteran. Doug, tell us a little bit about patriotism from your point of view.
Hey, well, first of all, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's definitely a pleasure to be on your show, and thanks for the invite. And before we get started and I answer that question, I want to say thanks to Eric Lunda for helping out, set this up, Adam Roth, you guys interviewed recently, and thanks to all the vets out there. Hey, you guys are doing a fabulous job, so keep up the great work that you're doing. Well, I tell you, you know, it's interesting when you talk about patriotism, and I want to tell you that patriotism is definitely not dead. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that. Perhaps in a little bit, we can talk about that. But and believe me, I got a lot to say about being a patriot. Personally, I'm an American patriot, and I'm upfront about it. I don't hide it in any way. I'm sort of the cheerleader for America, if you will. Although I think my wife Nancy's more of a cheerleader sometimes than I am. Our marriage is made in heaven when it comes to that sort of thing. So patriotism's not dead, and it's great that you guys are out there. You're showing an example of what patriotism is by doing this show. So thank you very much.
Well, Doug, give us a little bit of your background, if you will. I know you have a book out, as Jim Slater is also an author, and will be doing the segment each week with us on Vets Talk Freedom. Tell us a little bit about your background, your book, and so forth.
All right. I voluntarily joined the Army on August 1st, 1974. The draft had already ended by that time. The draft ended in January 73. I spent 40 years in the military. It was sort of a love-hate relationship, but I did it and I worked my way through it. Like so many, I joined for a variety of reasons. Perhaps the main reason was to prove I was a real man. Where I grew up, I grew up in the Deep South, the Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma type areas, and there were only a few ways you could prove you were a real man, and one of them was joining the military. So it wasn't really so much a decision, I guess, following the many town leaders that I had in the small town that I grew up in northeast Louisiana and in southern Arkansas. There were a lot of veterans out there, and they told me stories about their time and service to America, and they scared the bejeebers out of me. But their tales of combat, in that I learned a lot about comradeship. I learned about standing up against evil. And when I joined the Army, I was just walking in their boots, just like they did. To me, it was just, it wasn't a decision. It was just something you did. Now, I know a lot of people joined to prove their manhood. That was partly maybe what I did. But soldiers stay in the military because of their comrades. And I joined to prove myself, but I stayed because of my soldiers. And I'm going to tell you that I never apologize for either being an American patriot or being my time in the service. I embraced it. But another comment about patriotism, I don't want to let that go either, is it's the patriotism means to me that you're loyal to your nation, not a blind patriotism, but the kind that recognizes there's always room for improvements, but that each one of us have a direct responsibility personally to help make things, to make America, to make things better in America. And by the way, the nice thing about being a patriot is not dependent upon your social status, high class, low class, doesn't matter who you know, what your job is, where you're from, your political party, your skin color, none of that matters. Patriotism's an idea, and it can be stigmatized and suppressed, and that's kind of where you guys were headed, I think. But the idea cannot be destroyed by law or by edict. Patriotism's not dead. Believing in American values works. Liberty, individualism, family, responsibility, faith, American patriotism, love of the United States of America. So that's sort of where I come from.
Amen.
That's a little bit about me.
You have a book out, Doug. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, it's last year early, I was talking to my wife about the fact that I had a lot of relatives in the military over the years. My family came to the United States in 1750 on a ship, and we've been there ever since. It's a good thing. But I never knew what they did. So my wife says, why don't you write something for the grandkids? So that's what I did. I did a lot of stuff, and then she says, Nancy, she says, hey, look, this stuff's pretty good. You might want to consider turning this into a book. And so that's what I did. I turned it into a book. It was, I had to take a few things out. I admit there were some things I didn't want the general public to know about. There was nothing classified, no classified information in it. It's all public. So what I did was, I wrote everything up. I sent it off to a few people to take a look at it. Several were Vietnam veterans to take a look at it, a historian. My wife was the main person that was doing the reading. But it was about my first tour in Iraq. I was stationed in Baghdad as part of the 1st Cavalry Division. They're engineers. And this was at the early part of 2004 and 5. And during that time, there was a lot going on. Because that was not at the very beginning of the war. It was right essentially after the kinetic side of it. By the way, the name of the book is Our Longest Year in Iraq. And I say it's the longest year because it sure darn well felt like it was the longest year of our lives. Sometimes we called it Groundhog Day. So you were doing something every day, and it seemed to be a repeat of what it was before. I heard from a lot of folks that bought my book. They got copies of it. The most common comment that I ever got was, I never thought so much was going on in the Iraq War. Every page is a story. Every page is about the integrity and courage and daring deeds of those soldiers that I fought with. And by the way, I say soldiers here because I was with the 1st Cavalry Division. It was Army where I was. I did do a little bit with the Marines out in the West in the Fallujah, in the Second Battle of Fallujah. You can read about the book, but essentially it's about soldiers. It's about the places you've probably heard of, from the city of Ur, which is where Abraham lived in the Bible. It was all the way to Sadr City, to Baghdad, to Fallujah, to the main supply route, Irish, which is the most dangerous road in the world. Our soldiers were out there making a huge difference in the lives of the Iraqis. My book is written for those who want to know more about the war, and specifically the early part of the war, because that determined a lot of what happened later. It's written in what I call a rolling narrative format. In other words, you don't need to know anything about the military to understand it. I removed all the military jargon, all the acronyms to make it an easy read, because I want the general public to understand where I'm coming from. And there were so many that helped me make this book possible. So shout out to them. Marco Polo Smigliani, an Italian immigrant, a Vietnam vet, four Purple Hearts, Jim Calley, another Vietnam vet, to a historian whose name slips my mind because he's a professor at one of the colleges, to Bob Sims, another Air Force Vietnam vet. I mean, these guys were fabulous. Obviously, my wife was the main effort there. Was it an eye-opener for people to read it? That's what they tell me. And a lot of people thank me for writing the book because now they understand or get to read about what was hidden from them, sometimes purposely hidden from the American public by our media and by many of the politicians. And I'll just give you a quick example. You've probably heard repeatedly, you're told, that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and therefore Bush lied about the reasons to go to war. You've all heard it. I hear it almost every day. I want to tell you, on the face of it, the no WMD narrative is false. You probably are aware that Iraqi President Saddam Hussein used chemical weapons on the civilian Kurdish population in northern Iraq. I mean, he did it. The largest chemical weapon attack against civilians in the history of the world happened there. And he also used it on Iranian soldiers during the Iran-Iraq war. Chemical weapons are WMD, along with nuclear and biological weapons. Found large caches of chemical weapons in 2006. We knew about it earlier. We found the caches in late 05 and 06. I was tasked to help secure them, especially built bunkers. Now, that task came later in 2006 when I was there. We never found the nuclear or biological weapons. We did find active research into weaponizing them, but it was the chemical weapons, weaponized chemical weapons, we actually found. So if you want to kind of get an understanding of some of that, get a copy of the book. You'll see for yourself what was hidden. Here's a gem. And again, folks were sitting at home getting fed a bunch of bull hockey. I guess that's a good way to say it. Line from the news media. Reporters, I will tell you, were holed up in the hotel in central Baghdad, the Al-Rashid Hotel, never left the hotel or its grounds. They were using insurgent paid stringers. That's like an independent journalist, but they're not independent, to give them video and reporting. And all biased and always corrupt. If you heard the news in the U.S., it was inevitably wrong, because a lot of it was insurgent propaganda. And it burned us up to hear that propaganda going on. And again, that's why I wrote the book. By the way, you can only get my book on Amazon right now. It's going to be out in other places later, but you get it on Amazon. You can type in Our Longest Journey in Iraq. You can type in Doug Satterfield, the book will pop up. Obviously, I recommend it. I wrote it's not that long. It's like 235 pages or something like that. But pretty much an easy read. And it's a good friend of mine who's a Marine, says he's got a lot of pictures in it, so I love it too.
Well, Doug, what's your thought on our withdrawal from Afghanistan?
Like everybody, I got an opinion. And I don't have any problem expressing that. But I think I stand with almost everybody to say it's probably the worst debacle, clearly, in the history of our military. But in terms of the United States, I think it was one of the way it was done was one of the worst decisions ever made by any president in the United States ever. Now, we could debate whether withdrawing was the right thing or not. I think that's a legitimate debate. Personally, I don't think we should have withdrawn, but that's just my opinion. The way it was done, there should be no debate whatsoever. That was wrong. There are still people, Americans in Afghanistan, trying to get out. I work with an organization that is working on the civilian side to get a lot of those folks out. I'm just letting you know. Not just to give an example, when we went into Afghanistan, a lot of the Taliban, is one of the groups that we were fighting, were using British Lee Enfield rifles from the late 1800s. Okay, so they kept those weapons a long time, and because they worked, and they had all sorts of different calibers. Today, after we left, and we left all the most modern weaponry behind that the world has ever seen, now those same people who were using British Enfields from the 1800s are using modern weapons from the United States. We will see those weapons again. We will meet them for the next 100 years. Americans are going to be killed by those very weapons. I have a problem with that. Again, that was a blunder of massive proportions. I will tell you, Frank, clearly it was President Biden's decision. Legitimately, legally, that's his decision. It was wrong, but it was his decision. However, I have a real concern about General Mark Milley, the chief of Joint Chiefs of Staff, going along with that. I don't care if he personally said it was the wrong decision. He's still there. He should have resigned immediately. If Biden didn't take his advice, he should have resigned immediately. I think Mark Milley is one of the worst generals the United States has ever had. He's not a traitor, but he's certainly incompetent, and that's an example of gross incompetence. And
can I ask you a question for a minute?
The Secretary of Defense ought to go, too, but he's just the next worst one other than Milley.
I have a question, if you can, please.
Sure.
How hard would it have been to destroy those small arms? You probably know this question.
To destroy a weapon is fairly easy. The problem is there were so many. Mm-hmm. It would, again, you don't withdraw that way. You don't just suddenly run away. You don't do that. It was a retreat. It was not a withdrawal. You got to remember that it was a retreat. Right. And the retreat just, it was so mishandled. Also by the Department of State. I'm not letting them off the hook either. The Department of State was incompetent when it came to Afghanistan. They were more interested in flying the gay flag than actually trying to keep up with what was going on in Iraq. So their priorities were way off base. And so was Biden's priority. He was trying to blame Trump. No, when you're the president of the United States, the most powerful nation in the world, you're the president. There are no excuses for what does or does not happen. You're the man in the story. You do not blame anybody. You got to make the right decision. If you make the wrong decision, you got to be willing to take the hits. And he's not willing to take the hits. So that goes to the character or the lack of character. But Joe Biden, it's just a fact. I can't help it. To Mark Milley, the general in charge, to those generals and admirals that were on the ground there at the time, they bear the same level of responsibility as Biden does because they're still in the military. If you don't like the decision, then you got to take the stars off your collar and throw them on the table. None of them did that. And
that's right.
None of them got relieved for doing it. So that tells me there's a serious corruption at the most senior leadership right. in the military. And that's a sad condition. I don't care what your politics are. You know, I've talked to everybody in the entire world. If you think the Democrat-Republican divide is great, you should go to some other countries and see. I've been there. I've seen it. I've talked to the people. I understand it. But there's one thing you got to remember. There's only one mission for the military anywhere, and that's to defend the nation. And if you can prevent war, that's the best thing. And if you don't prevent the war, then you got to be able to win it. And that's the totality of the military. And the United States military, like others, they discriminate on who can go in the military. I don't know if you're aware of that. They discriminate. They don't discriminate based on race, because that doesn't matter. They don't discriminate based upon where you're from. They don't discriminate based on your religion. None of that stuff matters. What matters is, are you capable of being a fighter? And if you are, you can be part of the U.S. military. Now, there are other things that they discriminate on. You can't have an IQ less than 83. I don't know if you're aware of that. Because they figure you can't do too much. You're not even good cannon fodder when you're below IQ above 83. They also don't take people. who are grossly overweight. If you're too fat, you can't join in the story. Sorry, you can't be a fighter. Maybe you're a smart person. Doesn't matter. Hey, not my rules. It's their rules. And if you have a criminal background, a really rough criminal background, you can't be part of the U.S. military. But 3 out of 4 young people today in the United States cannot join the United States military. 3 out of 4 can't join because they're not eligible. So that
you know, Doug, as a Vietnam veteran, I came home in 1968, and not long after that, of course, we withdrew from Vietnam or retreated, whichever way you want to put that. And several years later, we made a solid commitment. We would never, ever leave anybody behind. We've turned around and repeated that again in Afghanistan. Plus the fact I didn't go serve, and I know there's 18.5 million veterans in this country plus. I didn't go serve this country to come back here and be told what I can see, what I can say, and what I can hear. And that's starting to happen, and that's why we are doing this Vets Talk Freedom. 18.5 million plus veterans in this country with families. That is a lot of clout. And I understand Jim Slater and others say, well, everybody's so busy living their lives. Well, they better stop, take a breath, and look around, because we're about to lose our freedoms if we don't pay attention. And the Joint Chiefs of Staff and what the military did or didn't do with Afghanistan makes me sick. And nobody's being held accountable, and it's time for us to step up and start holding people accountable.
Well, and you nailed it right there. It's it's almost like it's in our DNA. The ethos of the American military is you never leave a man behind, or woman, or soldier, or
right.
Marine. You never leave them behind, ever, period. Even if they're dead, you're going after
right.
the body to recover their bodies, period. I mean, we're still recovering bodies from the Korean War. Still doing that today.
That's right.
There's
an and from Vietnam.
Organization in the United States doing that exact thing.
Right.
So we don't leave people behind. And we did exactly that in Afghanistan. We left people behind. And not only that, we're not even trying, the U.S. government's not even trying to recover. It's written off. It's over. They don't care. Right. In fact, it's worse than that. They're actually putting impediments in the way of people still trying to get out of there, which is another issue. But you're right. It's shameful what was done. This is, of course, my opinion. It was shameful what was done. But, hey, if you make a mistake like that, especially an epic mistake, one that will go down in history as one of, is clearly the worst mistake ever made in the United States, Afghanistan, to retreat from it, then at least learn your lesson from it. It's the very least thing you can do. Learn your lesson, admit you were wrong, and move on. Well, that's not happening. In fact, everybody today in the U.S. government says it was the best thing that would ever happen. Absolutely wrong. Total denial, reality. I mean, that's the way I look at it. Total crazy folks are going on there. You know, it's crazy stuff.
Well, it's interesting that the Pentagon actually issued their findings on the situation. And they said, the military said not to pull out like that, not to withdraw like that. And nobody paid attention to it, to the people. So you're right. The leaders, or even the Pentagon has said the leaders should have done something more than they did.
Well, you're right. And in the end, they knew it was wrong. And like I said, you take the stars off your shoulder, off your collar, and you throw them on the table. That's the only honorable thing to do. Guess what? Guess how many did that? Zero.
Zero.
None.
Absolutely none. And not a single person was relieved of duty for it. Not a single one.
We had one Marine that stepped up. We had one Marine that stepped up and spoke up. And they...
Colonel, who was a commander, I got it.
Right.
And he said what he thought was the case, and he was he was right. Of course, he gets relieved of duty for telling the truth.
Right.
Another that you know you're not supposed to do that in the military.
If right. That's right.
His commander, I had to relieve him of duty, but I would have known at the same time that the man was absolutely right. He was absolutely right, and people need to hear about stuff like that. And unfortunately, a lot of it's hidden from us, and that's pretty sad.
Well, when you write your books, Jim Slater, with his historical books and what he is doing, people like us at Veterans Transition Resource Center is a 501c3 veteran charity, all volunteer, no salaries. We're all veterans, most of us disabled veterans. So we are out there, and we need to continue to put more and more people on the air like you, like Jim Slater, talk about the books, educate. Once again, we're destroying our history instead of teaching our history. We are, in our higher education, particularly today, we're teaching our children what to think rather than how to think. We have to make some big changes in this country, and we better do it come midterm elections or we're not going to have a country left.
That's something that I think most of us can agree on. There's a radical element in America that's not done as well. You know, it's always been there, you know, and I think it's good to have them there because when you listen to them, you go, well, that's a stupid idea. And hey, let's expose the stupid ideas for what they are. They're dumb. And let's talk about that. I think that's important. Let's not suppress the stupid ideas. Right. Let's bring them out into the open and talk about them. Hey, by the way, I was asked the other day, I don't know if you're interested in this, but I was asked the other day, would I recommend somebody who wanted to join the U.S. military today, would I recommend them going into the Army or the Marine Corps or whatever? Would I do that? And I actually wrote a newspaper article. It's not out yet, so I'll give you a little early review of what I said. We already know that most Americans are not eligible to join the U.S. military. We already know that, because I said that already. But the policies that are coming down today from the generals and the admirals that are politicized, they're not interested in the military's primary purpose, which is war. These leaders are really, I'm going to use the word woke political ideology, for lack of a better term. Yeah. But would I, given that, and given the decline of the U.S. military today, and it's clearly declining in terms of readiness, would I recommend a young person enter the military today? And my answer is absolutely yes. I still think if a person wants to join and they're qualified to join the U.S. military today, they should in fact join. So what would I tell them if they wanted to join? First of all, if you're going to join the military, you guys all know this. be prepared to get hit real hard by reality. It's going to hit you in the face real quick. And the second thing is, I think you need to think, if you think you're ready to join the military, let me tell you, you're not ready. So take my word for it. You aren't ready. So you need to get prepared as best you can. And in today's world, it's easy to go to YouTube and place and look up stuff. So that's a good thing. But before you join, you better get in shape, learn to get up early, better make your bed, do it every day, practice telling the truth. You better not lie to people in your military. They're going to eat you up like sardines in a can. You're going to get eat up. Learn to be honest. Don't bullshit yourself and don't bullshit other people. Don't betray your country, your brothers in arms, and never complain. You know, we don't like whiners. Don't assume nothing. Somebody said that a long time ago. Like the Boy Scouts say it best, be prepared. Life is very hard. It's even harder when you're stupid and unprepared. So do those things, no excuses every day. That way you won't be stupid. Even though our military is kind of getting dorked up, I still think it's important for people to go into the military today, because when the wokeness falls apart, we need good people there to pick up the pieces, good Americans. And that's why people need to go in the military today.
You know, Doug, when you talked earlier about joining the military today, there's so many that can't because of a variety of reasons. Wow, has it changed? I went in 1966, and if you were upright and your heart was beating, you were in. Today, you're a little overweight, or you're a little bit of this, or a little bit of that. What a difference few decades make. It's just amazing to me.
You know, you're absolutely right. Part of it is, I think, this is my opinion, is that it's an all-volunteer army today.
Right.
And to have an all-volunteer army, you got to up the standards a little bit, and that's what they did. Hey, I hear you, what you say about that. In World War II, what you read a lot about World War II, it was pretty much the same thing. If you could walk and talk and had one eye and one arm, you were in the military. I mean, you were there.
Yeah.
Everybody else, you know, they were doing something else. And that's why women were able to progress so quickly in the United States, because they filled the roles that many of the men had that went to war after that. I mean, there were huge numbers in World War II. It's still large numbers in Vietnam, much smaller numbers in the Iraq War and Afghanistan, much smaller numbers. You know, was it the right thing to do to go into Iraq and Afghanistan again? That's a debate. But I think it's important to engage evil in the world. You've got to know what it is. You've got to engage it, because if you don't, you become part of the problem. And Vietnam was the right thing to do. It was fought valiantly and bravely by those who were there, and they were ultimately betrayed and left to hang out and to take the heat and to take the people insulting our Vietnam vets. What was done was, quite frankly, was shameful.
But you know, Doug, going in the service today, it's too easy for them to get out. When I went in, there's two ways you came home: feet first, or with an honorable discharge. There wasn't any other way. You couldn't raise your hand during basic to say time out, or I don't want this anymore. When you committed, you were in, you were there, and you did it. Today, I'm hearing all kinds of stories that it's hard for me to believe that during basic training, there's things they can do and say to you that you're supposed to be tough. And when you're out on the field and you're in a firefight, you don't stand up in the middle of it and say, time out. You better learn to be tough. And they're getting out too easy. There's too many outs today. And again, that goes back to what we talked about originally starting the show, accountability. Nobody's being held accountable.
You know, Jim, let me say something about that, getting out, easier to get out. I had guys with us in the bush in Vietnam that shouldn't have been there.
Right.
Although they passed the qualifications, they qualified, they went through the training, and they ended up there. Combat is way different than anything else in the whole wide world. Mm-hmm. And there are people that should not be there. And if they're going to really crash during basic training, I kind of like the idea of them getting out. Kind of get out of the way.
Well, you know, I've been of that mindset also, that, you know, if you sign your name, then you're in it. That's the reason you're in it. I'll tell you a real quick story. One time I was visiting a military police unit, a subordinate unit of mine. I forget where they were at off the top of my head, but I was going down the row, shaking everybody's hand. They were going to leave on the plane the next morning to fly into Kuwait, and then eventually a week later they would be going into Baghdad. And I was shaking their hands, and I came upon this one gentleman, and I said, you know, hey, well done, you know, do us good. And he goes, I don't want to be here. I go, what are you talking about? Of course, most of us didn't have a choice. And his mother was there, which is good. Families were there. And his mom tells me, she goes, look, my son doesn't want to go to war. He didn't join the Army to go to war. I said, excuse me? She goes, my son joined the Army to get college benefits. Mm-hmm. That's not what he's not signed up to go to war. And I go, you know, so how do you handle something like that? Do you want somebody like that to go with you? You guys have been in the combat. I've been in combat. I'll tell you, you don't want somebody like that. So what we did, Absolutely. We had the guy discharged from the military. You definitely don't want somebody. And so he didn't get his benefits either, but he didn't go to war either. The guy was a coward. There's no doubt about it. He's pure and simple. He was a coward. But his mom was helping him be that coward. And that's what's so sad. You would think our parents would teach us a little bit better, like they did with me. It was like, hey, you got to be brave. You may be scared, but you got to be brave and do the right thing. You got to be honest. You got to be straightforward. You got to help your buddies. That's what the world's about. And yeah, you may come out on the short end of the stick, but at least you did the honorable thing. And this kid, I call him a kid because he is, you know, he didn't do the honorable thing. And I got stories like that all day. Yes, you don't want those kind of people around. But I had enough issues in combat with people not doing their job that you don't want the real dregs pulling you down. I mean, simple as that. I will tell you, though, for the most part in combat, when the units went over, they obviously had time. They knew it was coming, and they got rid of a lot of the people who were problem people. So so that's the good news. Only a few of those slipped in later. But for the most part, you know, you had good folks over there. I was... The people, if there was a problem, I had people flocking to us to help us solve the problem and to help get us out of trouble. If we were in a firefight or something, people would flock to us. So it was the best thing you could have. In fact, I always said that in parts of Baghdad, not everywhere, but in parts of Baghdad, it was actually safer than being in downtown Washington, D.C., because where I was, everybody was armed. And that was great because, you know, nobody's going to mess with you when everybody's armed. There's no doubt about it. And we were. We were armed big time. Yeah, I think it's okay to get people out. There needs to be a little bit more study, I think, of people who are coming into the military to make sure that they're joining for the right reason. Obviously, some will always slip through.
Well, I agree with that. And I think Jim Slater is absolutely correct. I've been in, Jim's a Marine, a combat Marine from Vietnam. I was in an engineer unit in Vietnam and certainly saw my share of bad things. And I want to make sure that person with me is covering my back. So you're absolutely correct. I'd rather bounce them out than get out where you need them and they're not there. Good point. Doug, tell us one more time the name of your book and where to get your book again.
Yes, it's Our Longest Year in Iraq. You can only get it on Amazon. You can get it as a Kindle, or you can get a paperback book. I recommend the paperback version. It's a lot easier. You can write in it, do all sorts of stuff. It's it's the kind of book you can buy and put it on the shelf. Let me tell you what it's not. It's not a blood and guts story. I don't do that in the book because, again, I'm writing it for the general population. Plus, the guys that I was working with were primarily engineers, except for the Battle of Fallujah. That's a little different, but it was for the engineers, and we were not the door kickers. We were not the infantry guys going door to door. We were not the ones patrolling the streets. We were the ones that made sure that these guys were safe as possible because we were building walls, barriers, guard towers, concrete buildings and stuff that they could actually use, building the roads, bridges, and that sort of thing. That's what we were doing to make sure that they could do their job as safe as possible, even though it wasn't safe, at least as safe as possible. So that's what we did. And let me tell you, if you go talk to them, they appreciated the engineers big time. They really did. They liked us because one of the things about Iraq, it gets really hot in the summer. If you've never lived where the temperature every single day exceeds 120 degrees plus, you really haven't lived. Let me tell you, that is something that you would definitely suffer. So you got to have some way to cut back that down. And in fact, our vehicles did not even, in the beginning of the war, in the book I write about, there was no air conditioning in our vehicles. Mm. And let me tell you, an armored vehicle gets damn hot really fast. And in fact, when I came back over, my wife showed pictures of me when I was in Iraq, and they were saying, how come in the summer he's wearing long sleeves and gloves? Mm. And she goes, well, the reason they're wearing that, because if you touch metal with your bare skin, you'll be burnt. Because I don't know what the temperature is, but it's certainly way above 120 on that metal. It'll burn you. So, yeah, if you're in the States, you really did not have a good idea of what was going on.
Well, Doug, we really appreciate all that you've done and the book. Jim Slater, talk a little bit about your books. Where do you get a hold of yours? And
I'm on Amazon. You can find my Clay Warrior Stories, the series, which is 19 books long. It covers young, hot-headed young swordsmen all through the ranks of the Legion during the First Punic War. And you can do them on Amazon. The easiest way to do it is Clay Legionary. Or you can go to my website, which is jcliftonslater.com. You can read blogs on ancient warfare, and you can read see all my books there.
Well, it's certainly been an honor to have you on, Doug, and as always, Jim, with what you've done with your books and as a Vietnam veteran, a combat Marine, there's a lot I believe we can do on this show, and hopefully we can get you back on again, Doug. We will be doing this segment on Veterans Talk Freedom 15 minutes every week, although this whole show has ended up being this today because Doug and Jim are on with us. We really need to get out and educate and talk about these things. We don't agree 100% on all of these things, but that's healthy. It's good to educate and talk about them, and we need to do a lot more of that. Hopefully our listeners, we've been doing this show 12 years. We stream on Facebook. We're on AM/FM here in Las Vegas. We will probably be going back on iHeart again here in the future when we get some sponsors coming on with us. So we have a pretty broad listening audience. And once again, we haven't asked for callers today because Doug and Jim are on, but we do have a couple of minutes left. If anybody has questions for Jim Slater or Doug, give us a call locally, 702-257-5396, or out of the area,
800-414-1056.
And again, give us a call with your questions, your comments. 2 weeks ago when we started this segment, we had quite a number of callers, some interesting ones, I might add. Mm-hmm. But that's healthy. And once again, I can remember when we had two healthy parties in this country, Democrats, Republicans, and they could sit down and agree to disagree. But today I think the Democratic Party's been hijacked, and we've got some left radical players in there that every time you hear them talk, they hate America for some reason. And I love this country. I went and fought for this country just like the gentlemen that are on as our guests today. I don't want to lose it. I want people to wake up and step up. We've become too complacent. We've become lazy. We wait for somebody to tell us what we want to hear instead of verifying.
Well, and also, like our guest, he said that the media falsely told things to the American public. Sure. Who then believed it, and is it true or is it not true? Case in point, the most liberal city is probably San Francisco. Mm. And they discharged three of their school board members and the media started spinning it with a lot of different things. But the most important thing they didn't tell anybody was 70% of the parents in that school district voted to get him out. Mm-hmm. Now, San Francisco, you don't have 70% conservatives to discharge somebody. Right. So it must have been both parties, nonpartisan, but the media is spinning it a different way.
Well, we don't have a media. We have a propaganda machine out there now. We have a few pretty conservative, pretty good operations that report the facts, but most don't report the facts. If it doesn't fit their narrative, forget it.
Well, people are starting to stand up, though, Jim, and that's a good thing.
I agree. And once again, when we have people on like Doug with his book, Jim Slater with his series of books, which Jim's goes way back in history, but there's a lot to be learned from that. And we need to, every week, get people involved. Call in with questions or comments, or you can email us.
ForgottenProm@gmail.com. And I didn't formally introduce Doug Satterfield, but he enlisted as a private and retired as a one-star general. He got to see the whole gamut from both sides.
Yes.
And knows what it's like from being an enlisted person or an officer person, which is a pretty hard transition.
And who does that remind you of? One of our founders.
Yes.
One of our founders, Jim McGowan, went in as a private and God came
out. CW4.
Right. Warrant Officer 4. Wow. That's saying something. Here was a man from Texas, a black man from Texas, back when they really did have different, all the discrimination in the world, different water fountains, different everything. He went in, enlisted, went through it, and never took no for an answer. Never let things get in his way, and came out of WO4. Vietnam vet. He unfortunately lost Jim a few years back, the result of herbicide poisoning or Agent Orange. Miss him every day. Here's a man that had a lot of wisdom. There's a lot of them out there. We just got to wake them up and get them talking like Jim did and start to educate. Any final words from you, Jim Slater, and then Doug, before we're running out of time here?
The whole thing about looking at the world as too big a slice. We got to look down and look at your own area. You got to look out your own front door. You got to look left and right in your neighborhood and make sure that you've taken care of those people and that you're communicating with those people that are close, because that's where all of this starts.
Okay, before we go, I just want to thank everybody once again for the Share the Love Valentine's drive-by food giveaway we did last week. We successfully gave away over 100 packages of food to people driving through, and before that we were sending out packages to the homeless in Sunset Park, which is adjacent to our studio. And Chef JB, you were responsible for all the homeless people.
Yeah, we went out once a week and gave out about 25 boxes to the homeless for about 3 weeks. So we've touched a lot of people. And
a lot of hard work, and it paid off.
You know what? Thank you so much to the Combat Motorcycle Group of veterans. They helped us right along the way. They donated the food with Spartan Arms, and thank you, Spartan Arms.
And Doug, any final comments from you?
Only to say thanks for allowing me to get a chance to speak with you guys. Get a chance to get a copy of my books on Amazon. Thank you so much.
Just a reminder.
You guys are doing
okay. Great. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate that.
Yep.
Hope to have you join us again in the future. Jim Slater, once again, we'll be doing this segment every week. I hope I can get you to join us when you have time available.
It's always my pleasure.
Okay.
Just a reminder for Nevadans, the mask mandate has been removed. However, federal buildings like the VA, the military base, the post office, they are considered federal ground where there is still a mask mandate. So put one in your pocket. Take it with you.
Yep.
Mask mandates continue at VA federal facilities. I've got the Chuck Ramey sent me this from VA, and you know, this is not over yet. Again, we're getting better. We're learning to live with it. We have some treatments for it, but we still have to, don't let your guard down.
It is real. And, you know, certain businesses still require masks.
Right, exactly. Well, JB, great job on the food giveaway.
Thanks.
Okay, we're down to the last 2 minutes now. Anything to say for any of our sponsors before we run? And again, I want to thank all of our sponsors, Jim and Susie Hill. I mean, we can go on and on. Of course, Travis Berwick with Galleon Welker and Beckstrom. He's been with us from the very start.
Yep.
And we have our Memorial Day coming up at Duck Creek this year. Mark that on your calendar, folks. It's not that far of a drive from here. It's a couple hours. Beautiful country up there. Come up and join us that weekend.
Yeah, and, great barbecue.
Right. And at that, we are out of time. We appreciate you listening in. We appreciate Jim Slater, the general calling in with his book. We're starting to really develop a nice group here, and I'm honored to be involved in this show with everybody here. At that, have a great week. We will see you next week at the same time. Have a good one.